while the world whizzes by. Enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. Make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.
Hey, everybody, this is Matthew Soltysiak, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast, part of the Minute Media Podcast Network. This season, it's all grit. I speak with a variety of guests and interview key players, gaining more insight on what makes this team go. The Detroit Lions are now in a new, grittier era, and we look beyond just the kneecaps when it comes to the analysis. Welcome to another episode. In this episode, we discuss the Detroit Lions 26-20 overtime victory over the Los Angeles Rams. We'll talk about what we liked, areas that may have brought us concern, turning points in the game, some extra overall insights, and major storylines coming out of this Sunday night matchup. Let's get to it, Lions fans.
This is James Williams, and you're listening to Not the Same Old Lions podcast.
Joining me today is James Cook, senior sports writer for the Traverse City Record Eagle. You can also hear him on his podcast, The Get Around. It drops on Mondays. James, awesome to have you here, especially on a Victory Monday.
Always good to be here on a Victory Monday.
Now, folks, you're used to hearing James and me talk about the recaps of the games. Well, now, in addition to that, we do have Coach Jerry Angers joining us for many of these. He, of course, was named Michigan High School Coach of the Year, as well as Coach of the Week by the Detroit Lions. He's also mentored numerous players to the college level and some all the way to the NFL. Coach, it's great to have you here for these.
Yeah, I'm just glad to be here, not in a bad mood after last night's game.
Yeah, because that mood was in doubt for a little bit. Like, you know, that nothing was guaranteed, and there is so much to dive into. Let's start chronologically, though. Let's talk about the game atmosphere, how it all started. I made my way down, got there. Doors opened 3 hours early, and people were still in line 3 hours early to get in. Now, the lines didn't take too long because of that early opening time. The atmosphere was so great. I really believe the Lions crowd has gotten really, really good at getting loud and getting quiet. We created a few false starts on the Rams in this one as well. And so, you know, it's not like what the playoff games can be like, but it's not a playoff game. So you wouldn't expect that same atmosphere. But it really does feel like, even though the national people have said it, we believe it, Ford Field has really become a home field advantage. You guys were able to catch the broadcast. How was it coming through there?
The announcers were talking about it the whole time. And I think, you know, that's kind of a closed booth, but you could hear it. You could still hear what was going on. So, and of course, when they enter, you know, the TV carries all that. So it looked crazy and looked like, you know, they were going to break the record.
But even without breaking the record, just making it a loud enough sound that makes it a difficult atmosphere. Ford Field is a completely different place than, I mean, even James, you've covered this team for a while and followed them. Do you remember hearing crowds like this back in like 2014, 2017 time?
No. I mean, you would have, you know, the Lions would sell out those games still, but there would be a lot of empty seats, you know, where people bought the tickets, but, you know, maybe didn't even show up and stuff. I mean, you know, the Lions technically sold out every game the year they went 0-16. but you know, the playoff games and then this game were, you know, pretty incredible atmosphere. I was watching the game from a bar with some friends, and I got there over an hour before kickoff, and I got the last booth in the place because there were so many people that were there to watch the Lions because this place was going to have the sound on for the Lions and stay open past when they're normally open to have the whole Lions game on. So you can tell people are geeked up about this. I saw so much Lions blue stuff yesterday and today. It was crazy. Even at a couple of stores that I was at, the businesses had printed shirts for their employees that had Lions stuff on them that were for the store.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, it the Lions fever spread everywhere, right, Coach? My wife was at Costco, and she even commented she could not believe how many people were wearing Lions stuff yesterday. And we've seen it all summer. This is great.
No doubt.
All right, well, let's get to our overall reaction, our takeaways. First off, let's get the takeaway and the overall reaction from Coach Campbell.
Anytime you play an overtime game, you know, and, you know, yeah, it's the first one. It's the first one you put a lot of significant plays on the body. It's a lot of intensity, a lot of volume. But more importantly, man, it does. There's an emotional element that goes into that. And, you know, you don't win that. That's, you know, it's kind of a gut punch for a little bit. So that was big to be able to pull that one out.
So, guys, I mean, this is a pretty big deal, Coach Campbell talking about winning that game in overtime. Yes, it's only one game, but going 1-0 or 0-1 to start the season, I mean, that is an influence on how you feel and how your week goes on. So let's just look at some big overall picture thoughts coming out of this game. Coach, talk about that picking up that victory in week one and what that means for the players and the coaches.
Well, really, you think about it, you beat a team twice in a row. You know, you played them last year, and then you played them this year. And you know, everything was on the line for it. It's huge. And again, they, you know, the coaches, players, everybody talked about it. You know, we didn't play a great game last year to open the game, but we beat the Chiefs. And we didn't play a great game this year, but we beat the Rams. So it's huge. I mean, so many things. Again, you can go back to what's the growth. Where's your biggest growth? Your biggest growth is week one to week two. And, you know, we just have to shore up some things and iron out some major details, which I know we'll talk about today. And, you know, that will become that much better. So it's huge. It's just huge for the whole thing that you realize all the hard work without any preseason games. And we came out with a victory. So that's great. That's good stuff for the Lions.
Yeah, getting through that first week victory, even with those things. Like you said, the Lions didn't play their best ball, but they still won the game. James, a big takeaway, overarching theme you have coming out of this?
Holy cow, that offensive line is so good. just so good. That overtime drive was amazing. It was just a thing of beauty. I don't know how much you want me to go into that, but I think we'll delve into that later a little bit more. But, man, that offensive line is just impressive. And every one of them played every snap of the game. Nobody left.
Yeah, that offensive line was something else in overtime. We will talk about that into quite a bit of detail. And the other thing that I think was also impressive was the Rams' plan of attack, considering how many injuries they had going into this game and dealt with during the game. And so that'll be something we're talking about. And Campbell even referenced it in his press conference today. Well, let's start with key moments of the game. And James, the first one I want to bring up, I think you're the one that texted me about it during the game. You, me, and Jerry were texting throughout the game, and you brought up Carlton Davis. And I think one of the key plays was that 4th-and-4 stop at the 20-yard line. What were you seeing out of Carlton?
He just brings such stability to that position. You know, he's a veteran who knows exactly what he's doing, and whenever the ball was thrown his way, his guy didn't have room. He had to make a contested catch. Also, he's just a very sure tackler and willing tackler, which is, you know, something that Campbell always demands of his corners and everything. But just to see it backed up in the game, and this is the first time we got to see him because he didn't play at all in the preseason. So his addition to that defense, I think, is going to make a big difference.
Yeah, Coach, how about you? What are you thinking of the Carlton Davis impact? And are you surprised the Rams went for it on 4th down there and didn't kick a field goal?
Well, I mean, when you're on the road and you're down bodies and stuff like that, and you know that the Lions got a great offense, yeah, you gotta take the chances. I mean, those are Dan Campbell things too. I mean, people do it all the time. So, I thought that was a great time to go for it, and with their short routes. But go back to Davis. You know, the pass that he does break up, he's flailing, his body's all over the place. His arms are going. He's trying to knock the ball down. You know, he interrupts the vision of the ball. He always seems to be in the spot he needs to be in. And James said, and you know, he's going to help our young guys immensely, especially on the road, because he's going to be able to communicate with them, because they're going to be able to hear him, you know, on the road. And so I think, you know, he's definitely going to help those guys, because that's some of the concerns we had with those young pups and those guys finally playing together. But I totally agree. Carlton Davis is a huge addition for our defense.
All right. Well, you know, the defense had some growing spurts or pains in it throughout parts of the game, and we'll get into that about what went well and what could improve. But one of the other key moments came from that secondary with that interception by Kirby Joseph in the end zone just before halftime. James, what were you seeing during that play?
It's a lot of like what we've seen from Matthew Stafford in the past, except it was a safety, you know, in floating in coverage instead of a linebacker. Stafford just has a tendency to lose track of those guys in the middle of the field that aren't playing man exactly. And that's safeties and linebackers most of the time. So, and just a great play by Kirby to cut that route off.
You know, as they were marching down the field and they were doing it methodically, I did turn to my brother-in-law next to me. And I said, the one good thing is down in the red zone, there's not as much space. So everybody gets closer together. Coach, how big of a deal was that for this defense that Stafford seemed to, you know, methodically move on, but then this was the epitome of stopping them in their tracks and bending but not breaking.
Well, he was working the sidelines too a ton, and that's when he had to go in the middle of the field. You know, James made the point, he did that when he played for us too. I think Kirby Joseph baited him. I mean, it looked like Kirby squatted down so he couldn't see him. The other thing is with the blueberry uniforms and the blue end zone and the blue the blue sidelines, I think he was camouflaged. I don't even think he saw him, which is what you said earlier. So no, but you know, and I think it's right. I think it's just, you know, that small area where you think you got tight, you can't put it over the safety or the corner underneath. You can't put it over his head because it's going to go out of bounds, and he forced it, and it was, you know, it was a big play for us. But you know, again, the Lions made critical plays in critical situations that, you know, made that, you know, change that game around.
So another one that James brought up was, and you actually said play of the game, I think, James, was the Jared Goff quarterback scramble. Tell me what you saw in that one.
Something that you don't see too much. I mean, you know, the Vegas line on Jared Goff's rushing yards was 0.5 on the over-under. And it was that way pretty much consistently last year too. And he only hit it five times. Yeah. He only hit the over five times. So, you know, the Rams totally were not expecting that. And it came at a pretty critical juncture there too.
It did. There was actually another one where he threw the ball incomplete, I believe, on the play, but there was another chance, like on a third down where there was enough opening that I thought he might do it again. He didn't. So like you said, it is a rare thing. But, man, that was big when he did that. And it wasn't necessarily a super easy run either. So if we switch back over to defense, Coach, the Lions got some difficult spots on defense due to some penalties. And we can talk about those, whether we agree with them or thoughts on those. But in the fourth quarter, the Rams had first and goal after a penalty, and the Lions held them to a field goal. Talk about what you saw on that drive-in. And, again, like, how important – well, we kind of know how important that was because, you know, we got to overtime. But what is that showing you about this defense that, again, Stafford threw for 300 yards, that, you know, but they held their ground?
Well, I think our coverages were very vanilla. You know, I think they were – I don't think we get into a lot of coverages because of the young bodies, because of the first game. And Stafford picked us apart on it. I mean, we saw it. He was sending those motions and throwing those little flare passes. You know, we missed a couple balls batted down. Branch dove on the one and missed one. You know, there's a couple other ones. We had a couple pass interferences. But, again, we go back to that end zone. We got them in or into the red zone or into that scoring zone. You know, we bend, don't break. We were that way last year, you know, towards the end of the season. I think we're going to be much, much better as the year goes on when these young guys start to learn the coverages and stuff like that. So I don't think we're going to be, you know, again, we rise to the occasion. We rose the occasion to kick the field goal before the end of the game. We rose the occasion to win the game in overtime with, you know, in with our home field advantage. So I think that's one of the biggest things is we Glenn dials up some things and we get pressure on. And I think they look at each other in the mirror and look at each other in the sub, say, who's going to be the one to make the play and stop this drive? It did cost us a lot of offensive reps, but we got a W. So
we did. And, you know, as much as the defense got moved around at times, the last 4 minutes of the game, the Lions got the ball back with like 4.5 minutes to go, and they went 3 and out. And I didn't know if the Lions were going to get the ball back. And the defense really stepped up here. What do you think it was that got that to happen?
When they, you know, I think they, I don't know if they put more pressure on them or if they changed their coverage up in a little bit of that situation, a little bit of bump and run. They were taking the sideline things away. The biggest play of that one was where Stafford overthrew. I can't remember which receiver it was. That might've been Kupp. And I think, you know, Kupp, the dude made some plays, man. I mean, he was the old one, that toe drag that he made and, you know, the run. So, but I think that was the biggest one. I think we had enough pressure on him. I think we used our linebacker to cover him up because Stafford saw his helmet and had to get, had to get it out early. You know, Stafford made a play, I think it was the series before that. It might've been that series too, to move the chains a little bit, where he just got annihilated and threw the ball up and the receiver was there. I mean, Chris Collinsworth said it's the best pass of the season. Well, probably is. We've only had one game this season so far. But anyway, you know, stuff like that. So I think that was the biggest thing. I think we just buckled down and said, we got to go. We got to put pressure. Offensive, our defensive line, linebackers, corners, safeties, everybody has to play together. And we got the job done.
That's what it comes down to, getting the job done. Those were some of the key moments that were pivotal. And you could just put in all of overtime and the way the offensive line played in overtime. Why don't we go to what went well? And, James, we'll start with the offensive line. And I got a question for you. It seemed like, well, the offensive line moved at will, it felt like, in overtime. But also, David Montgomery moved at will because he is, as you might call, a battering ram. I saw the Lions put that out there. And Campbell talked about the shape he came in at. But I want to ask you, what do you think the difference was in overtime? Now, the Rams were gaining time of possession throughout this game in the second half, and that was starting to worry me about our defense. Do you think it was the defense wearing down, the relentlessness of David Montgomery that finally opened this stuff up? What did you see from the offensive line throughout the game, and what do you think the difference was in overtime?
A bit of all of that. I mean, you know, the Rams ran 17 more plays than the Lions, so I think that the offensive line was pretty rested at the end of the fourth quarter in comparison, and they played like it. You know, and splitting time with Gibson and Montgomery in the backfield, Montgomery for those last couple of drives was just able to, you know, fresh legs and was just able to be that battering ram and running back. I mean, one thing I think really stands out about that drive in overtime is they ran the exact same play twice in a row and got gains on it both times. They just flipped which side they ran it to. That one where they put Laporta in motion and then Hesse in motion to pull back and run out of the eye. It was the exact same play. Just they ran it to the right once and to the left once, back to back. And both times got chunks of yardage with the Montgomery.
Yeah. And like you said, on that drive, I think Gibbs came in for a couple of plays just to give Montgomery an opportunity to catch his breath. And having that 1-2 combination is amazing. Coach, I mean, and James, we've talked about this ever since they got David Montgomery, and it seems like some people are like, oh, yeah, we forgot how good this guy is. We've been bragging him up with his running style, nothing against Jahmyr Gibbs. We think he's amazing, too. But, Coach, how amazing, what does this – I mean, we're already seeing what this is going to allow the Lions to do. Talk about what you saw out of the running game, and were you either of you guys able to focus in on how Kevin Zeitler did?
Yeah, two things. I'll touch Zeitler's second. Let's talk about that final drive and let's talk about what they did. They went to 13 personnel. Okay. And I keep saying 13P and people go, there's three tight ends. When we talked about who they were keeping on the roster, we were questioned, Matt, you questioned, I wonder why Mitchell didn't stay and stuff like that. Another receiving tight end. We just found out why. Okay. They lined up in 13 personnel and said, we're going to run you over and we're going to run behind Sewell And going back to, we didn't get cute in that drive. And just like James said, we ran the same play once to the right, once to the left. But last year against the Rams, I kind of put that thing on our from last week. We ran that 12 personnel. We ran on that first drive. We ran to the right six times, I think, last year, and we threw the ball to the left. Okay, this year we ran to the right. We ran a reverse left. We ran the opposite play left, but we stayed to the right behind the best offensive tackle in the game, with the probably two of the best blocking tight ends in the game. And that's why we're successful. We didn't get cute. We said, let's go and live off that line. And I think we talked about that, you know, even in the third, you know, how they get better in the third quarter. And James even said that, let's not get cute. Let's just do what we do. So I think that was the biggest thing on there. And him and Zeitler and Sewell together on those doubles, and then climbing to the backer, sending the were unbelievable blocks. And they weren't stalemate. They were pushing guys back 6-7 yards. So I thought Zeitler did a great job in that. The biggest play I remember Zeitler doing was the first sack in the first quarter. He stepped over and tried to help double with Sewell. And they ran that loop stunt inside. And my first thought was, dude, you don't need to help a Sewell double. That was my first thought. Second of all, Zeitler, if you look after the play, he clapped his hands like, oh, my God. They ran that stunt 3 or 4 more times than I counted. I haven't gone through the game anymore. And Zeitler picked it up every time. So he's a big thing. And Glasgow had missed a block, too. And, that, you know, and I think he was a better right guard than left. So, and again, how much have they played together this year? So they'll iron those things out. So
have you ever tried to explain football to a kid? It's near impossible to make it make sense. I know my girls didn't get it at first. Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. My daughters and I read through the book and we played each of the games. Their excitement grew as we progressed, and at the end, you could see the connection between the activities and how they correlated to understanding football. It's a well-put-together product. Folks, in addition to running Not the Same Old Lions podcast, I'm also a teacher. I know a thing or two about learning. Future Fans specifically designed their product to engage and educate kids about the game of football. My daughters aren't just fans of watching football either. They're now playing flag football too, and they're big Lions fans. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. It's only $49.99. Use the code LIONS at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories with a kid in your life starting now.
If you're a facilities manager at a warehouse and your HVAC system goes down, it can turn up the heat, literally. But don't sweat it. Grainger has you covered. Grainger offers over 1 million industrial-grade products for all your operations, including warehouse HVAC maintenance. And even better, they offer access to experts and fast delivery, so you and your warehouse can both keep your cool. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
All right, James, what else did you see that went well for you by the Lions in this game?
Well, Jake Bates kicked 2 chip shot field goals. You know, that was supposed to be the thing, is that he wasn't great on short field goals. Neither one of those had a problem at all. I mean, they were pretty much right down the middle. So, I mean, that was one great thing.
Minute, were you nervous on those kicks? How were you feeling?
I was nervous in that, you know, that if he misses one of those, that it might, you know, damage his mental well-being and his confidence in himself and everything. So I think hitting those is going to be huge in the future. To see them win a game, 2 of their stars did next to nothing in this game, and they won. You know, Amon-Ra St. Brown did hardly anything. Sam Laporta did hardly anything, and they still won. They won the game with the offensive line and with the running back combo, and you know, had their best receiver being Jameson Williams.
That is a big, big takeaway. The fact that they could win with those guys producing so little. And again, That's producing little in the stat sheet, right? There's things they do, and Coach is going to talk about that. Just because everyone says they were taken out of the game, well, that's an overgeneralization, because even last year when J-Mo wasn't catching balls, he was blocking people and opening things up for people. And so, Coach, what is your takeaway? What were they able to do without the ball in their hands?
Well, I think that, you know, the crossing route that J-Mo ran, St. Brown was on a takeoff, and the safety went with him, and J-Mo ran the route underneath it. So, you know, those opened it up. We had a couple plays where he had some decent blocks on there. And I think those are the biggest things, is we forget and upset that, oh my God, he didn't have, you know, his 8-9 catches, but he did run off his routes and he ran hard. I mean, he's not going to take down. He is as mad at himself as any of us are disappointed that he didn't have more yardage, but again, he did the things to open up J-Mo. You know, maybe that was the game. Maybe St. Brown knew coming in. You know, here's the biggest thing he did. Okay, here's the biggest thing J-Mo did. I mean, Saint did. That freaking dive when he slipped on the pass route in the fourth quarter, you didn't see it, and he dove and basically became a defensive back and knocked the ball down when he slipped on his cut. They would have intercepted that ball, game would have been over with. You didn't see it because you're in the stands, but that was such a huge play. And I think so, you know, there's that one. You know, he had a couple early things, you know, out in the flats. And then, you know, Laporta had a huge catch in the fourth quarter, you know, and again, that, you know, were they decoys in those situations? So, you know, yeah, I'm upset. And I fear for the Buccaneers this week, because Saints going to be in a bad mood, I think, and look out. So, and I think we need another receiver to help him. I think that would help him big time. I think that's what Reynolds did for him last year. So,
yeah, we're going to talk about that when we get into areas of possible improvement. And I think you're right on with that one, and it'll be interesting to break down. But they did a lot of great things, even without the ball in their hands. But as we saw, there might be some opportunities for improvement there. James, anything else that the Lions did well? Well, I guess let's say with wide receiver a minute. Jamison Williams, all right? Everybody's talking about him now. We've been talking about him for a while, and we've seen him in training camp. We've been excited. We've been optimistic. You know, when I was able to interview him this summer, you saw and you could feel the joy, but you also saw the size changing in him a little bit, the physical makeup. And he had talked about how he had goals, and they were to, you know, win football games and score touchdowns. And that happened in week one. So, is this a one-off, or is this what we think is going to be the beginning of the potential evolution of Jamison Williams?
Oh, I think it's just the beginning. You know, I mean, you talk about NFL people all the time talk about, you know, the third year wide receivers, and that's when they really take off. And I mean, and you know, we've talked about this before, that he's really only a second year receiver because of how much time he's missed between injuries and the suspension. Him being this big of a part of the offense, I don't know that the statistical part is going to be sustainable, obviously, but just being this big of a part of the offense is going to be huge. And, you know, and like Jerry said, I think they do need to bring in another wide receiver, but we can talk about that a little bit later.
All right. And Coach, I mean, what was part of the reason J-Mo was able to do some of this stuff was because the Rams were paying more attention to St. Brown and Laporta?
Oh, there's no doubt about it. I think they read all the press clippings and all the things he's doing, but they still had to go back and say Laporta and St. killed us last year. St. had, you know, 9 receptions or whatever against those guys last year for 119 yards. Yeah, you're going to take those guys away and say, you know, can Goff hit the big play to J-Mo? Can J-Mo run a great route? And I think there was some of it taken off, but I think they had him in the back of their mind about how good he is. And they found out. And I'm telling you right now, people aren't going to leave him alone now, because that double move he made for the touchdown and that crossing route. And if I hope nobody's watching his interviews, because that dude just grows on you. Oh my God. I watched them like five times today, all different ones. And the one with him carrying the game ball around because Goff gave it to him and he wouldn't let it go. He said he's never gotten a game ball in his life. And he said, I think I'm going to be sleeping with this. And I think he is. And he deserves what he got last night from how hard he worked, from what this coaching staff says. And he even said it, I got to get better. And all right, let's go.
Well, and we've always given him the benefit of the doubt and said, you got to be patient. He's young. He's battled injuries. Give him time to grow and mature. And then again, I said the same thing to you after meeting him this summer. I said, anyone that's heavily criticizing him right now, it just seems to be an unfair judgment because, again, his heart, his mind are all growing in the right place, and he's a football guy, and he just wants to play football and do well. And, you know, I know this isn't a fantasy football thing, but I intentionally picked him up off waivers before week one, and in the other league I ended up joining, I traded for him before week one because I was like, something's going to happen and nobody will let this guy go. And that's what happened. So I think you're right, though. We are at the beginning of seeing what he can do. And we're going to look in a minute here about what potential help could help out that wide receiving core. One last thing I want to throw out for a good thing. The Lions overcame some big penalties. Okay. The penalties weren't good, but those two pass interference calls, which, and again, you guys helped me out seeing the broadcast. I didn't think that was a catch by Cooper Kupp, and you guys saw the toe drag and said it was. There was that one that was an interception that we all thought maybe wasn't, but we just had the jumbotron. But those pass interference, even Campbell said they were ticky-tacky. I don't think Arnold looked bad, too bad in those situations. They were calls, and maybe they were legit, but we overcame them, and they didn't define the game. James, how big of a difference is that compared to what we've seen in the past?
Well, it goes back to, you know, mental fortitude and this team just having that mentality, you know, that we're not going to beat ourselves. We're not going to let the other team physically beat us. We're the superior team. And the other thing about penalties that I noticed too is Aiden Hutchinson was getting some holding calls. If that starts happening on a regular basis where the refs start calling that, and we were saying how last year about how they never did, and he was being held every game egregiously, how many drives is that going to end? I mean, that's as good as a sack if you have a defensive lineman that gets held.
It's about time on some of those calls.
Yeah, they did miss the bad leg whip.
That leg whip, yeah, they did.
Yeah, they call that one that drive's over with and the game's over with, but. It is what it is, but right on that, James. They definitely made some calls because he was getting mugged pretty good.
Yeah, and if you look at Aiden Hutchinson too, the one stat that I saw about him is that he had a 47.8% win rate.
Yeah.
Which is the highest in the NFL since 2021 for any defensive lineman.
Wow.
And yeah, he was going up against a backup tackle, but I mean, You got to figure that there's been plenty of defensive linemen that have gone up against backup defensive tackles in the last 4 years or so, and they haven't done that.
Well, the three highest rated players for the Lions in week one were Aiden Hutchinson, David Montgomery, and Jameson Williams. Three guys we were giving a lot of praise to. I got to put 4 and 5 in there because we might not talk about them a lot, but they definitely deserve the accolades, and that is Graham Glasgow and Alex Anzalone. They both did some great things. Coach, though, let's talk about areas to improve, and let's start with that wide receiving thing. You brought it up. James agreed with you. Talk to me about what you're seeing and what you're thinking.
Well, I think with Reynolds last year, I think it took a lot of that. Let's go back to the safety just sitting in the middle and just about destroyed St. Brown twice. You know, that little dump pass to St. Brown for a first down. We did that against them last year where we threw it short to him and then he busted. He got that first down where he leaned forward. And this year, I mean, he got that one. He just were on the interception. There was another one where he took a hit on. Those guys are just sitting in the middle, whether there's not a threat. You know, the threat of J-Mo going over top is good now. but the threat of Jamal going over top with another big receiver going over top is going to take that safety away. And I think Tampa, you know, we talked about, I think Tampa played a lot of, the Rams played a lot of cover two last year. This year, I think they baited us in cover two and had that guy come down. New D coordinator. You know, and I think he came down, he baited us into throwing that ball, you know, the one to Sam Laporta, which three guys tackled Sam Laporta on a third and nine. We threw the ball at third or eight or whatever it was, three guys. And so I think, you know, once we get that different receiver, that's going to help things out on that, you know, and again, you have to get the more bodies we got. And I don't know how much, what was going on with Laporta, if he wasn't getting out or if they weren't seeing it or if they're disguising their coverages that much. So, but again, those things will all be ironed out this week. I look for big things for him this week for all of them.
Well, and having that, so yes, we expect a lot of improvement. I mean, you could almost just say you just want to somehow survive week one with a victory, no matter how ugly it is, because there's so much growth between the first and second week that you learn about your team, especially if you weren't playing in the preseason. But that big-bodied receiver, right? Someone like the guy the Lions brought in on the practice squad, and they have multiple guys that fit that billing, that changes the way somebody's going to hit somebody over the middle too, because you're suddenly going to try and hit somebody with size, and we've seen it. You know, you're not going to knock them over as easily, and it creates a different wingspan and target zone. So, James, what do you think it brings if Tim Patrick or Allen Robinson can elevate from the practice squad to the active roster? What can that bring? And, you know, Lions fans have all been clamoring for that big-bodied receiver, and how active do they really have to be? I mean, do they have to catch lots of passes, or do they just have to be on the field providing a complementary role?
I think it just is a complementary role. And like you said, that red zone target. And I think that's what I think this week you'll see them bring Tim Patrick up. You know, they brought Tom Kennedy up this week. Had they put Patrick on the roster this year or this first week, his full contract gets guaranteed. And for a guy with an injury history like his, they probably didn't want to do that. I think that Allen Robinson is just Tim Patrick insurance, essentially, because he has such injury history. And they both need to get up to speed too. So that, I think that's the reason why neither of them played this week. You know, a wide receiver in this offense isn't going to get integrated into the offense in a matter of a couple of days. So now they'll have a week and a half at least, of doing the stuff and getting in there. And that's what I think is going to happen, you know, is that Patrick gets signed to the regular roster, probably with that roster spot from Chris Smith being waived and going to the practice squad.
Yeah. The Lions waived defensive lineman Chris Smith, who was playing last night. He has now been waived, for opening a roster spot. Well, kind of staying with the wide receiving theme, but flipping around to the guy throwing the ball to the receivers, Jared Goff did not have his best game in week one here. What do you think contributed to that?
Well, Jared Verse was able to get a lot of pressure for one. They were bringing some guys off the edge that were getting some decent pressure, even though they weren't necessarily beating the Lions line one-on-one. They were able to get some guys around the edge and get somebody in his face, and no quarterback likes that. So that may have affected the stuff. It's still, I mean, you're looking at his stats, 18 to 28, not horrible. 217 yards, not optimal. You want more than that, but that's what they needed. I mean, you know, they won the game. He didn't really turn the ball over aside from that one interception. And like you said, that one was one that could have been reviewed. It looked like from the angle that I saw it from that maybe the ball touched the ground, but there was no angle that showed that.
Coach, how about you?
I the same thing. I think the new D coordinator concept in there, I think maybe there were some things thrown at him that he hadn't seen before, which is normal in a first game. And, you know, you don't have enough film on guys. And so I think, you know, this little bit of that pressure, you know, maybe St. Brown not getting open as quick as he normally has. They're bringing that safety down. I don't think, You know, he had you know, a couple throws where, you know, he knew he missed them and he should have gotten them. You know, a couple of those flares. He threw the, you know, great ball to Jamo. He overthrew the first ball to Jamo, right? They had two takeoffs, the crossing route. So again, we are so accustomed to him, you know, throwing for what, 260, 270, and St. Brown getting all these yards, and Laporta, and I think they went into it with a little different game plan, and I think they accomplished that by getting Jamo to break loose, and now people aren't going to be able to come underneath because they're going to lose games, and it'll get back, and I'd love when Goff has kind of a subpar game, because the next game he always picks it up, and he's beating himself as much as anybody else is, and we want a football game, you know what I'm saying? We want it all. I know that, guys. We want to be 17-0, but I love it, you know. I mean, we won. We did what we needed to do to win.
Well, and that's the thing, Coach. James rattled off his stats. I mean, yeah. Did you see some of the other stat books out there from week one and some of these quarterback play? I mean, and we won the game, and it wasn't like we won the game despite our quarterback play. You know, he was a complimentary piece. I think this goes right back to what Dan Campbell says, complimentary football. Each part helps. Jake Bates got the job done. Fox got the job done. Defense played its role and got the job done at times, and so did the offense. So, you know, they all worked together, so nobody had to carry. And we talked about that. Jared Goff didn't have to carry the team. Like, he probably felt like he almost had to back in the playoff game. And so it was a different type of pressure, a different type of situation. And so anything else you guys want to talk about with the Lions needing to work on improving?
I think we missed a lot of tackles. Branch had two big misses, and I know that Branch, I guess, at halftime walked into Campbell and said, "Coach, I will not miss another tackle." He did have some big hits. You know, the big run, and I, let's talk about the big play to is it Johnson, the crossing pattern one where he stopped and then spun back around for a 63-yard gain on that one. You look at it, you watch it on film. We have guys just flying around out of control, and he turned that into a big play. That won't happen again. And you're talking about younger guys. You're talking about the new guys. You're talking about a defense that hasn't fully played together. And I think those are things that we're not going to have to worry about. You know, I those are just some big plays that they got. The missed tackles, things like that. But we made some plays in that situation, which they'll get better on those. We know that. And they're going to learn. Now they have film, you know. The eye in the sky don't lie. And it's gonna make a big difference for week two.
Well, that's the thing. We've talked about all preseason. This is the first time these guys are all playing together in a game. We're expecting growth as the season goes on. And you guys are right. Bodies were flying around. Lions were running into each other and taking each other out of that play. It looked very undisciplined. And you said they've got film to work on. They're now going to get coached up in a way that they couldn't get coached up during preseason because it was practice tape. It wasn't game film to look at. Well, then let me ask you this. What about the Lions secondary coverage as far as the short passes and the out routes? Now, you know, this is kind of what the Rams did well, right? They knew the Lions were going to probably be able to get pressure on them due to the injuries up front. And so Stafford showed he is still a very good quarterback in the NFL and masterfully was getting rid of the ball really quick. And whether it was a 5 to 7 yard in or a 7 to 8 yard out, were our defensive backs giving too much cushion because they didn't want to get burned deep, so they were willing to give up the short stuff? Coach, how are you viewing that little back and forth?
Well, they're picking up, you know, he was sending the motions to find out their man or if they're in zones. And everybody knows Tom Brady lived off it. You know, when they get in the zone, they know the corner's going to drop a little deeper. They're going to throw a little out route, turn a 3 yard, you know, 2 yard catch into a 5 yard, you know, 6 yard gain. And I think that was the biggest thing. And Stafford's smart. He knows, you know, and I, again, I'm going to go back to, at I think it was in the first quarter, they threw that and Branch came flying down and laid out. And I think he just missed it on one of them. You know, I think he just missed it. But then again, I think he got one later in the game. And I think our coverages were like, again, I'm going to go back to Glenn didn't dial up a ton of great coverages, different coverages with different looks because of being the first game. And so I think those things are going to change. I mean, everybody's going to go. Here's the deal. When I was calling, I'm going to talk about Gaylord Blue Devils. They threw a 5 yard out all the time. That's what they did to march down the field. And when the Gaylord Blue Devils would get over the 40 or over the between the 40 and the 35 yard line, they would air one out and take a shot at the end zone. And I remember that because we coached it that way. Let them have the 5 yard out. Let them have 5 yard out. Let them have 5 yard out. Now we're going to go cover four, and we'd pick them in the end zone. We did it probably 3 years in a row. And that's what was happening. And again, you guys even talked about it. We got the interception in the end zone. You know, we made them field goal again. What did we do? How many times have they been in the red zone in the last 2 years and they've scored 7? I can't remember that number. I think it was 1. I think they got 1 this year, right? And so, you know, all those possessions, and we know that we're going to score 7 more times than other teams are going to, and the teams can't beat us kicking field goals, and we know that. So, again, let's see how much it changes in week 2.
Well, let's talk about coaching. You brought up Aaron Glenn and some of that stuff. James, what were you seeing out of the offensive side, Ben Johnson, the play calling, especially as we went into the second half?
A lot of stuff that I think that Jerry really likes, which is, like you said, the 12, the 13 personnel, using all three of those tight ends sometimes all at the same time. And I think part of that may have been out of necessity because, you know, they didn't want to have to, you know, they didn't have the depth that they want at wide receiver. You know, so, you know, their play or snap count at wide receiver was, you know, basically Amon Ross and A. Brown playing every snap but one the whole game, 60 out of the 61. And then Jamison Williams, 52, Khalif Raymond, 37, and then Tom Kennedy, 4. And I think I turned to one of the guys that was here, and I was like, the Lions are so confident right now that they're agreeing to play 10 on 11 because they have Tom Kennedy out there. you know, but once you get another wide receiver out there, you know, a Tim Patrick, especially in those red zone things. I mean, he's a, you know, a big bodied receiver who can go up and get those high jump balls and everything. I think that the things will be good, you know, one thing I would have liked to see a little bit more from the offense was a little more of Aki. He only got to play 2 snaps and, you know, they didn't give him the ball either time, I think. So I would have liked to seen him.
Do you think, towards the end, obviously they've got, you know, Montgomery and Gibbs in there. Do you think it's because it was a tighter game throughout that they stayed with the guys with more experience, James?
Yeah, it could be. And that they were, you know, they were just kind of splitting them by drive for the most part. You know, they were, this drive was going to be Montgomery's, this one was Gibbs. And they were kind of going about it that way. So it makes it a little bit harder, I think, for them to get Vaki into the game. He did play the majority of the special team snaps. I think the most of anybody in special team snaps aside from Jalen Reeves-Maben.
Yeah. Well, they had like 3 3 and outs too, right? At that one point, it was 3 3 and outs. And I think we had at one point, it could have been in the beginning of the fourth quarter, we had 37 offensive snaps. You know, and so, yeah, and I think that comes back to what Matt says was, hey, we don't have a lot of snaps. And well, Monty and Gibbs are splitting these reps, and, you know, they got, you know, 18 reps between them. You know, we better keep them on. So that stuff will change when we start getting up into our 70 and 80 snaps a game, which is, I think, we were last year in big games.
Yeah, you're exactly right on that, Coach. Because, again, the second half, the Rams had some long drives, and I'm like, we need to get our offense back out on the field. And you're right, we didn't get as many snaps. So let's look at some final takeaways, some big picture stuff, any random thoughts or themes about the game or coming out of it. I want to start with the running game. it's not a new thing, at least not for us. When they drafted Jahmyr Gibbs for a reason after they had signed David Montgomery as a free agent. As good as St. Brown and J-Mo and Laporta can be, Dan Campbell wants to run the football. He wants to pound the ground game. And that's what won this game in overtime. That is huge because it takes the pressure off the other situation and it sets it up. If you can run, it sets up the play action. And so do either of you guys want to comment on the fundamental importance of this running game and how the Lions are probably attempting to create maybe one of the best running games in the NFL this year?
Control the clock. You know, you control the clock with the run game. And I'll tell you that we haven't even touched on two of Gibbs's runs. Okay. He had two of those. The one where he was going, where he got to the edge for a first down and we didn't think he was going to get it. The one where he was going to the edge, put his foot in the dirt and went vertical. And the touchdown run was unbelievable. You guys, him stretching and what he did and kept, he looked like Monty on there. He looked like Monty on that. He said, I'm getting in the end zone. And I think those are the things that, you know, we're going to live off. And that's going to open up St. Brown and Laporta and J-Mo. And let's get 70, 80 reps a game. Man, are we going to be fun watching those guys?
That was the greatest replay ever. They're like, we're going to do a replay to see if he fumbled the ball. We called him down at the quarter yard line. And then they come back. Review shows touchdown. Like, the crowd went crazy. I was like, well, that's like the best review we've ever had that we didn't want. So that was incredible. And you're right. He is a hard runner like Montgomery. So let's look at the running game, though, and the receivers. Guys were slipping on the turf a little bit more than normal. Campbell was asked about it, didn't really think it was a big deal or anything. From what we know, nothing's changed about the turf. James, were you surprised to see as many people slip or not really?
It was a little bit surprising, but, Jerry was talking about Amon-Ra St. Brown when he fell down. He made the most of it and made a pretty good play that ended up being pretty crucial in that game.
For sure. All right. James, any other big thoughts, takeaways that you have on the Lions right now?
One encouraging sign, I think, was that Levi Onwuzurike looked pretty darn good on the defensive line. And, coming back from the injuries that he's had, that's going to be just an amazing boost for them. And the interior of their offensive line was the strength of their offensive line. And he went up against that and looked pretty good. Ali McNeil was nearly invisible though. That's a little bit of a worry, but I'm hoping with DJ Reader back next week, probably that kind of changes things around.
It was nice to see that Hutchinson got in on a sack at the end there to end regulation and send the game to overtime. The Lions did get some pressure, and yeah, if Levi can be there and do what he did like this, that could bring things to a different level. And I guess if DJ Reader comes back, it'll be real interesting to watch them move all those pieces around.
Yeah. Well, McNeil too. And on the McNeil part, who was in front of McNeil on the offensive line? Jonah Jackson. And I think about that. Jonah Jackson's out there. He's probably set those guards up and everybody up on all McNeil stuff. It's huge. I mean, nobody even thinks about that little intangible, but that little intangible is Jonah Jackson's like, his left knuckle's a little bit wider. He's going outside or he's pressing more with his right hand, so he's going to work inside. And I'm sure they doubled him a little bit more knowing that we didn't have Reader in there. But Davenport, too. And I mean, they had like 5 and 4 pressures, Davenport and Levi. So, there's a lot of good stuff, a lot of good stuff to build on. That's for sure.
All right. Well, if you guys don't have anything else, I just want to go to overreaction time right now and just say, hey, game one is in the books. Your outlook on the season, has it adjusted at all? Is it just right where it is? James, let's start with you. Where are you at on that?
I think it's pretty much right where it was because I was pretty optimistic coming into this season and I'm remaining pretty optimistic. I think a 12-5 season is still what my prediction is for this team this season. And, you know, like Jerry said, that the defense is going to get way better when these young guys play more. You know, Arnold played almost the entire game. Rakestraw came in for a few plays here and there, and then played a lot of special teams. But once they get these guys mixed in there a little bit more and used to that, this defense, I think, can really be something. And we've, you know, we've seen what the offense could do. I mean, they put up some pretty good points to, you know, without Laporta and St. Brown. Imagine when those two guys get going and Jamison Williams is going, and maybe a more capable third receiver and a guy, big guy like Tim Patrick.
How about you, Coach?
I'm same, no change. We're 1-0, and this week we got to go 1-0. So that's let's just stay undefeated next week and go 1-0.
Yeah, I'm the same way. Yeah, very boring here. No change. Already optimistic about the Lions going into the season. I'm again, 1 week, you can't overreact to anything. You know, anything that didn't go brilliant for the Lions, well, look at some of the other teams in the NFL and how some of the things went for them. And, you know, ask some of those teams who were expecting to do really well and maybe play an opponent that people weren't expecting much of, and they didn't even get the win. Though the Lions played an opponent that a lot of people think is a very playoff capable team. And you know what? It wasn't. The other thing is, guys, we didn't talk about this. The Lions didn't just go up 24-0 and then it was cruise control. They went up, but then they saw the lead go away and they trailed, and then they had to come back from that. Coach, you know, I mean, it probably seems obvious, but that's valuable for a team to have to go through that, and especially the first week of the season.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, especially when you go up 17-3 and you feel you're rolling on it, and then they come back and answer right away. And then of course they come back and answer again and take the lead, you know, and again, it comes down to, we got down there and kicked the three, which I was hoping for a winning touchdown for the tie. But what did we do? We buckled down and crucial. And then we won the coin toss and we ran it right down their throat and said, this game's over with, move on, you know, have a safe flight home to Los Angeles. So yeah, it's huge for the team. It's another growing thing, another young guys. And like you said, we got out of it with a lot of negatives, but it's a W.
And those young guys who haven't played with the Lions before got to be on a team that saw it could overcome adversity. I mean, you know, they're again on that drive where the Jake Bates field goal sent it to overtime, we got to no room for error. And you could put the same thing on the defense. We had to stop the Rams or we weren't getting the ball back. And so good to be tested early and come out this way. So, well, that was a crazy fun ending, especially the way we dominated in overtime. It gives you a lot of optimism and hope for that running game and what that can do for the passing game and just the offense in general going forward. James, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
The nickname that a guy that on one of the Lions message boards that I frequent came up with for the offensive line has grown on me, and he came, and the name of it is the Motorcade.
Oh, like it.
I like that.
Yeah. So they just need to follow the motorcade.
Coach, how about you? Any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I don't have anything on that. I mean, that motorcade's got me. I'm still smiling about it and probably be screaming every time, run behind the motorcade.
You know what? I think the motorcade is what we're taking and we're getting out of here. James, Coach, thank you guys so much for all the insights, all the knowledge. Folks, thank you for tuning in. You can find more episodes and content at notthesameoldlions.com. If you're listening on YouTube, please hit that like button. Tell your friends about the show. Subscribe regardless of your listening platform. And until next time, stay gritty, my friends.
While the world whizzes by, enjoy a moment of me time with Tim Horton's $6 breakfast bundle. Savor a small hot or iced coffee, then add your choice of a mouth-watering hot breakfast sandwich and a crispy golden hash brown and your pick of a classic donut.
Yeah.
All for $6, all just for you. make your mornings all about me time with our $6 breakfast bundle. Available at your neighborhood Tim Hortons. Price and participation vary. Terms apply.